think every time you shop, you walk into the store, and no matter where it is, you're looking around for what's new.
Welcome to How We Bloom, an oasis of flower ideas. I'm your host, Sharon McGuckin, AIFD, AAF, PFCI, and I believe that every great success story starts with one simple idea. That's why we interview those who dare to do things differently, inspiring people who plant seeds, grow ideas, and bloom to their full potential. In this podcast, we listen, learn, explore new opportunities, and that's how we bloom. We have a very special guest today, my favorite trend forecaster, Talmadge McLaurin, AIFD. Along with his take on trends, you'll be entertained by Talmadge's keen observations and dry sense of humor. I, like many other floral trend watchers, love to see Talmadge's annual trend forecast presented on stage. If you've missed it, no worries. You can visit flower.style.com to find those inspirational images and trend stories as they evolve. Talmadge's floral career began in a family-owned flower business. In 1990, he launched a 23-year floral publishing career, contributing to more than 400 issues of Florist Review and Super Floral magazines. As the creative director and publisher for Florist Review Enterprises, Talmadge was featured in more than 20 books for florists. Inducted into AIFD, the American Institute of Floral Designers, in 1988, Talmadge has staged 8 popular trend presentations at national symposiums. In 2008, he received the AIFD Award of Distinguished Service to the floral industry. Known for his astute trend forecasting abilities, Talmadge conceptualized the America Floral Trends Forecast in 2002 and remained involved in its publication until 2014. Now, Talmadge resides in Fort Lauderdale and is part of the creative team of Sunshine Bouquet in Miami. Trend spotting for flower farms, growers, and importers, capturing every part of the industry from production, marketing, and business sales to the newest designs and color palettes. In his nearly 3 decades of trend watching, Talmadge has discerned that floral trends are not revolutionary, they're evolutionary. Our dear friend and floral forecaster is here today to share those details with us. Hello, Talmadge. Welcome.
Good afternoon. It's good to see you. I like looking at the people that I talk to. So
that is very nice to be able to feel like we're in one place.
Like we are in one place. And we're talking about something very visual today, and we don't have a visual medium, so I'm going to have to use my words, as we tell the children all the time, use your words, stop screaming. I sort of fell into this whole trends thing by accident, I think, more than anything else, because I just couldn't imagine that the floral industry couldn't get on the same page and sort of bolster our businesses collectively by telling the same story. So that's kind of what, as a publisher at a magazine, and as a journalist, really, because I think that's what trend watching is for most florists, is going out there and ferreting out what really matters aesthetically to customers and how we can, really harness that and turn it into sales.
I think trends drive impulse sales. It's like clothing. You know, you have clothing, but when the new season comes and the new clothing styles come, you want to add that to your collection. The same, I think, with floral trends. As the trends evolve, you want to bring that home with you and feel like you have a new idea or a new feeling in your home.
And I think what distinguishes that is that, when you're buying new clothing, or you're looking at the new fashions, it's telling you a story. It's not just hitting you with something different. It's something you buy into.
I agree.
You buy into it because you like the story that's being told. And that's kind of what I've tried to add to each of these looks that we pulled together for 2023.
And that's what I find so interesting. I, of course, love the images, but I love your stories. I think that's what gives the trends value.
Well, and all of them are related, fortunately or unfortunately, fortunately for the accuracy of the trend report, unfortunately, because we went through it, but they all sort of, you see all these stories through COVID-colored glasses. You've heard of the rose-colored glasses. Well, those got broken somewhere a couple of years ago and turned into COVID-colored glasses. And so I don't think anything in our world is quite the same. And I know your son, I was listening to his podcast this morning with you, and Drew said that it was sort of a reset that we all went through. And not only did it reset the way we want to live, it reset the things that we're attracted to. And so as we go through these six different looks, they all relate very specifically to what happened with COVID.
Because it was a very specific experience and something that I'm not sure we're going to leave behind us for a very long time.
Yeah, for good or bad, it did affect us. And we'll see that as we get into them a little bit. I think of myself more as a journalist, I said, as a trend forecaster, because I had a good friend who said, prediction is really good unless it's about the future, and then it's not terribly accurate. So what I try to do is hinge my predictions on something that already exists, something that I can bet on, that I can really depend upon. So we look at all the trend forecasters who are out there, and it's not floral trends, it's trends for all different kinds of products. And we try to learn over the years how to relate them to flowers, how specifically maybe one trend really works for flowers and another one maybe doesn't work for flowers. And so it's just ferreting that out and finding the hookups there that can change our business.
One of the things I think is important is that we must realize that a trend is a projection. It's not an absolute. This is where we think we are going with the products we see in the marketplace now. For example, the Pantone color of the year, we think they've chosen a color for the coming year. They've actually chosen a color that's seen in numerous markets that is the color of the year. So where a fad usually lasts about 6 months or so, and a trend 2 or 3 years, and a style 5 to 10 years, they're all still projections of what we are going to see, more so than we name them and then aspire to become that.
Right. And the other thing is the trend reports that we purchase to inspire us for the flower trends are the same trend reports that, designers are going, fashion designers are going to, interior designers are going to, people who are developing products, people who are, painting the interior of your home, any kind of product that's looking forward is going to witness these same reports that are out there. And so just because we're going a lot of times to the same source, it helps to validate, and everybody sort of gets in the same line. And like me, if you want to be a leader, you just find a parade and get right in front of it. So sometimes that's what I have done. I feel like I've done here, because a lot of the work has already been taken care of. It's just fitting it into a story that helps sell flowers.
But one of the interesting things, I in particular love your trend stage presentations. One of the interesting things is that people who might not be able to identify an isolated trend, once you put it into a stage mechanism with the materials to use, the containers to use, the concept to use as a sales force, then they can see it and they can go back and build vignettes in their own businesses to project that. And it's very important in our floral businesses that we have the same projected image online that we have in store. because you don't want the customer to find you online, come to your store and be disappointed. You don't want them to come to your store and then when they try to use your website, be disappointed. You want to have that same cohesive look, and trends helps you to fine tune that.
Right. And I look at these trends and I imagine somebody trying to digest them and to make them their own in their own business. And I hope that when people look at them, that they have a sense of freedom about it, to where it's just a springboard. If you look at a certain palette and it doesn't quite work for you, and you think maybe you could really update it, or that your customers would be more interested in it if it included this color, well, by all means, grab that color, add it in, and distinguish yourself from everyone who's out there, and make it just kind of your, like I said, a creative springboard to start a trend forecast of your own.
And I think you have to adapt the trends regionally also. I don't think that I in Atlanta have exactly the same surroundings that you have in Miami. And so it's important for florists across the country to remember to first move forward with trends for their region. If you're in Kansas, don't try to mimic New York City, for example.
Exactly.
So, well, can you speak to us about some of the upcoming trends?
Well, yeah, let me take you through them really quickly. The first one that comes to mind is one that I'm calling green space. And it's really based on the fact that when COVID hit and everybody was staying at home, there was kind of a push to be to communicate, to be surrounded by nature in some way. And for folks that were living in urban areas, this became quite the task, because, you know, you couldn't just drive to the country. Here you are stuck in a concrete jungle, and you're wanting to commune with nature. How do you do that? Well, a lot of city planners really got on the ball and started creating more green space, more parks within the city. In the city of Paris alone, they gave up 70,000 parking places, and the populace voted on this. If you've ever been to Paris, you know there's no place to park your car, and they're giving up 70,000 of them just to create plantings in the inner city. So this whole look is based on our need to interact with nature. And the United States, 83% of folks are considered to live in urban areas. So it really is more widespread than you would think. I mean, I'm a country boy. I don't imagine that many people live in the city. But there's all these people sort of trapped in the city trying to find a green leaf somewhere just so that they can feel like they are commuting with nature. So this palette is based on a couple of really a spring green and then a deeper rich green. But it's the blossoms that happen in these plantings that really steal the show. So you've got a lot of bright colors. You've got a lot of hot pinks and oranges that all play together. I've called it that. I've imagined that we're reclaiming the rainbow for everyone. It just doesn't have to be in a pride parade anymore. But if you reclaim that rainbow and throw it up against some verdant green plantings, I think you've got a look there that people are going to be attracted to. And that's what is behind the idea of green space.
And I find that one very interesting, because when I think of green space, I'm expecting it to be the greens and whites and mossy tones. And so it's interesting to see the bold color interplayed there. I like that.
Yeah. Communing with nature. So the second one that we looked at is something that we called ephemeral. Now, I know it's a fancy word, but it just means here today and gone tomorrow. And it related in many ways to the fact that during COVID, you were stuck at home. There was a lot of cabin fever going down. People were just, you know, kind of losing their minds, and the fact that they didn't really know who was attacking them. Has nature suddenly started to attack us, or is it just some crazy man-made thing that came out of a laboratory in Wuhan? I mean, people were really confused about what was going on, and I still don't think all those questions are answered. But that's beside the point. The fact is that we were really seeking some comfort in our lives, and we wanted to surround ourselves with colors and materials that were comforting. And so this sort of introspective, sensitive palette of colors is about bringing in a lot of pastels that people can that are sort of easy on the eyes and that provide a sense of comfort. And then we paired it with when I was I always worked with Leatrice Eisman at the Pantone Institute. She's the North American director of Pantone, and we work on the palettes together. And she said, "You know what? If you're really gonna want to make this idea or this palette heartfelt, you should add kind of a dusty red to it, because it really sort of that red color ties it to our heart. When you're buying flowers, you know, especially men, when they're buying flowers, they grab, you know, a red rose. When you think of Valentine's Day, you can't think about it without thinking about the color red. And of course, you know, the upcoming Christmas season, red is such an integral part of what's going on there. So it's all these various pastels tied with that kind of dusty red, and it makes a very soft, easy to look at, feel good trend.
And I love the delicacy of that particular trend.
Me too. Third up is something that we called utilitarian. I don't know if you remember back just prior to the pandemic, the whole idea of cottagecore was growing, especially online among a lot of young people. But it got a bad rap in the fact that it was sort of based on some ideas that didn't seem to have a clear world view. It didn't seem to be as woke as it needed to be. It was a little bit too Anglo-Saxon. It was a little bit too Little House on the Prairie. So we took that look and we cleaned it up and added some world view to it, brought in some textiles and some weavings that really made it inclusive. And it still has those same warm palettes that many of the ideas of cottagecore had. But it's very basic, it's genuine, it's authentic, and it's what people wanted to do during the pandemic. There was an idea that, you know, I just want to move out to the country and live a simple life again. And of course, nobody did. But that's that idea of that is what it's based on. And so this very organic, functional trend has an abundance of warm colors, and it has a lot of stems in it, a lot of floral stems in it, that seems like you might have just been out in the country picking up some, you know, goldenrod or some, you know, a few wild sunflowers or some Queen Anne's lace and sort of gathering them all together. But we want to bring that as a commercial product, even though it seems like it was something that you just maybe gathered yourself in the country.
And I liked the way that you mentioned in your writings that it hints to America's addiction to nostalgia. Whenever we feel uncomfortable, we need something that's nostalgic to reinforce that we're okay. And it's interesting, too, when you stop to think that nostalgia for each person is dependent on their age, the years that they grew up in. Nostalgia varies with every generation.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, nostalgia for me is definitely living in the country. So
yes,
it's sort
yes,
of
myself also.
A bucolic plague of sorts. The next up is something that really harnesses our creativity, the creativity of youth as well. During this pandemic time, a lot of people were going to school online, and nobody could really travel. And the thought of going into a museum was just almost unheard of. They'd all shut down. So many of the major museums around the world opened their doors up virtually so that you could hop online. It would be absolutely free to tour the Louvre or just numerous different museums around the world. So something happened creatively. All these young people were virtually traveling and looking at a lot of Roman and Greek icons, like the busts and the statues and the columns. And it sort of spurned a creative sort of smash up. I don't know if you ever watched Glee and they'd take two songs and they'd smash them up. Well, these creative youngsters, as it were, took the classical elements and smashed them up with some new ideas. So if you have to be living under a rock if you haven't seen all the faces and the sort of kickbacks to Roman and Greek times that are so prevalent in the accessories market now. And if you take it one step further and add some really bright colors to it, some really contrasting colors to it, it makes this whole classical, historical creativity new, youthful, and it's definitely an eclectic look and a super, super young look. So I think that's kind of why I like it. It's based in the classics, but it's full of just wild creativity.
The classics rewritten.
Yeah. And the colors go, and they range from purples into peachy, bright peachy pinks, into some grays called blue granite. And they even threw in the color of last year, Very Perry, is one of the elements of contrast as far as the palette is concerned that smashes up with all these Greek and Roman icons.
Very good.
Next up is something we call voluptuous. Now, it's very, you mentioned that I live in Florida, and Miami is very voluptuous in yes. its attitude. It's very, this look is very expressive and vibrant, and it's full of energy. Mm-hmm. It's just really, it's the time to party now that COVID is theoretically over with. And that's we all knew if this thing ever got finished that we were going to try to have a good time again. And that's sort of what embodies this whole look. It's sensuous, it's robust. And one thing that it is very inclusive of everyone. It's inclusive of all skin colors, body types, points of view. And it just all comes together in a palette that is completely and utterly warm. So it's the pinks to the reds, to the burgundies, to the peaches, to the oranges, to the rusts, and there's no cool color involved at all. In fact, when you take all the flowers that you can gather in those particular hues and you pull them together and you don't use the color green, which would have been the opposite on the color wheel to the red that's central to this look, and if you take that green away without that contrast, suddenly all these other related colors start playing together and having their own little party. And that's the gist of it. This sort of intense celebration.
Well, there's nothing like a flower to brighten up a party. So
yeah. If you take those flowers and you throw them we're seeing a lot of these vases of people without their clothes on, and. I'm very popular, and in fact, there's one designer who has a vase that you're getting a rear end view on this vase, and it has two little handles on it, and she calls it love handles. So I mean, there's a bit of wit to the whole thing as well, but it's bursting with primal energy and definitely celebrating a lust for life.
Very good.
So last up on the six different trends that we've looked at for 2023 is something that we call atmospheric. It too, during COVID, was a overriding sort of preoccupation with people about what we were doing to the world. I mean, is this disease that we're having to deal with something that we did to the world accidentally or intentionally? Whatever the case, we certainly could use some responsibility checks on how we are creating or cleaning up pollution and really what we're doing to the world. So this palette celebrates the earth, the world, in a macro view. So it's the teals of the ocean. It's the blues of the sky. It's the verdant greens of a pasture, and those colors come together and play off of each other in a very you know, soothing way. It's a dark, rich, sort of mysterious and magical palette, and it celebrates the earth in how we can sort of responsibly move forward.
In the transcript, there will be links to the trends that you've just mentioned and to the website. And then in the blog, we'll have photos that represent these trends also. So we will be able to guide our listeners to find this information that you've provided at flower.style.com.
Yeah, at points, it becomes sort of limiting to just only use my words. Because everything here is such a visual medium, and it's pretty easy when I can show slides or I can show something visual, because people get fascinated by what they're looking at, and it doesn't really matter what I mm-hmm. say, they're just sort of engrossed in the whole beauty or lack thereof of any particular look that goes on here. But I do think that most people respond well to all of these. There's nothing here that's sort of scary or so far out that that it's unrelatable. And I think that's something that's really important to recognize about trends, is that they're only as good as their relatability.
Absolutely. And as you spoke of each one, I envisioned the stage presentation I saw you give at SAF. And just loved the way that you presented those trends, as you said, in person with flowers and with your monologue. But it's harder to see it in your mind unless you have an image. So thank you for putting that into the website that people can go to actively and follow.
Yeah, it's you know, for a while I was working on trends for a company that I was working for, and we tried to keep them secret, only sharing them with our buyers. But I mean, if you just really can't keep a trend secret, and if you did, it probably wouldn't be valid at all anyway, because it's just something that everyone has to be enthusiastic about for it to really be valid.
And of course, as we said earlier, a trend is a movement. It's not a stationary object. Trends are evolving in and trending out at all times. A trend doesn't just arrive in 1 year. It's in the making 2 or 3 years as we move in that direction. So,
yeah, just exactly. Tiny little shifts and a brand new story. That's what's really exciting about it. Because, you know, nobody's going to go in and change their world every 2 or 3 years. Yeah. I mean, they might adjust it slightly. So that's why it's so important that the trends that we do embrace in our business is relatable to people, in the fact that it's a movement forward. It's not going to be so disruptive that they can't really bring it in for their own enjoyment.
Well, and it's suggested that retail florists, for example, have a 60-20-20 rule as they provide materials for each season. That is 60% of that that you know you can sell, 20% of the basics, whether it might be velvet ribbon or Christmas or candles or something like that, and 20% of latest greatest. And those really new popping trends typically are not your best sellers. They're your better seller the following year, because you have to see something about 27 times before it feels normal and integrated to you. So the customer comes in and they see those beautiful trends for this year, but the 60% actually goes better with what they had last year and they can integrate it. Then that 20% latest greatest, it evolves into this part of the 60% the following year, and there's something brand new that's eye-catching, brings them in the store, but they buy mostly from that 60%.
Right, right. But just like me, there people are really resistant to change, but I'm not resistant to a new perspective.
Yes, and we enjoy having something that enlivens our designs. It's fun to create a new look, new color harmony.
It's also fun to tell a new story.
To tell a new story, absolutely.
Yeah. After a year, you get tired of the old story, you know?
That's true. How else would you suggest that florists use trends to build vignettes, to tell stories, to have in-store events, to bring the customer to the story? Do you have any suggestions in that light?
I do. I think that florists in particular we accent the world and we accent interiors. And if you're going to tell the story well, you're going to have to bring in other elements so that people get the whole idea visually. So, I mean, shop around for a piece of furniture that helps you tell the story, for a new fabric that you've seen that you imagine people might be using in their interiors, a couple of throw pillows that also grab and perpetuate the story that you're telling. So it can't just be a new colorful flower arrangement that you hadn't expected. You've got to give folks a point of reference and how it's really going to help them and accent the stories they're telling for themselves and the materials and the colors and the patterns that they're surrounding themselves with.
And then if you create those vignettes in your brick and mortar store, and then you photograph those vignettes and you put them on a landing page on your website of what's new and clever in the showroom at work, the person has the opportunity who is shopping to find that online, fall in love with it, and then come to your store to purchase it. So you use those trends as a gateway to bringing in foot traffic. And we've lost a lot of foot traffic because people got used to ordering online. So now we have to use a hook online to pull them back into our stores.
And maybe try an actual collaboration with, a designer in your area or an accessories store in your area that you might bounce ideas off of and share products. It's long been kind of a joke that every florist thinks they're an interior designer and every interior designer thinks they're a florist. But it's so nice when those two can, when they can get along and really use each other's strengths in a way that's helpful to both parties. So yeah, I would some collaborations with some other visual professionals in your area is not a bad way to help move trends forward.
Also, I think because people are more driven by experience shopping now than just shopping for items, I think that shops could bring in a potter and have him do a talk and display pottery, an author, and have a book signing. If you have the space in your shop, allow small garden clubs to use your space for a meeting or have a tea for a group. By bringing in people who are doing interesting things, you add interest in your brick and mortar shop.
And also if you can, host a flower arranging class within your space, and you can talk about the ideas and the things that are exciting and are trend worthy, it's going to have a great impact on some of your best customers. I've often said that you never really love flowers until you can get your hands on them. So that's why I always want to encourage people to empower their customers to work with flowers, touch flowers, arrange flowers, and really enjoy the things that florists have for years known are a heck of a lot of fun.
Well, and a lot of people have had great success with having flower classes in their store. And if they didn't have the space in the store, I've seen people put tents out and do an afternoon in the tent or something. But one lady in one of my audiences once had a really great idea. When she went to an event, like a design show in the wholesale house, which is one of those is where I met her. She said that she bought the materials that she saw me using on stage. She bought those materials and she took those trends and those looks back to her shop. She sold tickets for her own design show and she made similar designs using similar materials as to what I did. And she said, this is what I learned at my design show. And the people did exactly what she did. They got excited and bought the materials themselves. And she charged for that. And that's how she paid for acquiring her education. She would have the event in her store that people paid to come to. And that money went toward her visiting more design shows. I thought that was brilliant.
Well, and it all revolved around creating some enthusiasm.
Yes. Yes.
It makes a difference. Yeah.
And enthusiasm is contagious.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, if you can create some enthusiasm, you've gone a long way.
And I think that's one of the major things that trends do, because it is something new and exciting. Even though it's an evolution, it still is different enough each year that it feels fresh.
Right. And I think every time you shop, you walk into the store, and no matter where it is, you're looking around for what's new. Mm-hmm. It may not be, you know, you want to see something different. You want to be inspired. If you're like me, you're sort of a visionary, you gravitate towards those things that are aspirational, things that I don't have that maybe I want. So, and I think a lot of Americans are that way too. They're looking for what's new and what can enhance their lives.
I always think that a great place to start looking for trends is in the fashion department. For example, the Atlanta Merchandise Mart, I would always start when I was shopping for a flower shop, when I had one, I would start in the building with fashion, because what we wear, we love, and then we feel so comfortable in it, we start to integrate it into our home. So if you watched it, the colors, the textures, the finishes like fringe or no fringe, fur fringe, those type of things, once you had them as clothing, then before long you had it as a pillow also. It's also funny to me, because of trends being overriding, as you said earlier, for every different industry, you can have a car, a rug, a pillow, and a sweater all of the same color, because that's the newest trend.
Yeah, the color of the year is, you know, when they announce it, whether it's the Pantone color of the year or it's even the paint stores, you start looking for that color everywhere, and you'll start to see it. It's you know, automatic. People pick up very quickly on that. It used to be that you could sort of surprise people, but the fact that we communicate so readily and visually with our computers and our phones, there's not much that's a surprise to people anymore. So when people see something that's trend worthy or new, and it relates to something that they've seen on, if you're a grandma on Facebook, if you're a little bit younger on Instagram, and if you're super young on TikTok, if you see those items show up that were surprising to you there in your local florist in some way, in some shape, in some form, then that's how you manage to keep yourself relevant.
And it gives credence to them too, because then you're like, oh, they're on track.
Right. Exactly.
I think, remember the days when we did product development by going to Europe to shop the trends, and then you would come back to the US and formulate what trends you wanted. We'd go to Asia and make the trends. And so it was as though the conception was Europe, the construction was Asia, and the consumption was the U.S. But there could be a lag from 6 months to 3 years in a trend making it forward. And now it's about 30 minutes because somebody takes the picture and emails it right over to the factories.
Yeah, and it doesn't really necessarily follow that same path anymore.
No, not at all.
A trend can be developed on the street, captured on your phone, uploaded to some social media, and it goes from there.
Pinterest drives trends very often now because so many people follow it. And a trend is the action of what people are preferring in a space of time. Pinterest drives trends very often.
It does.
Well, we just appreciate you so much for being with us today. Talmadge, I've looked forward to this because I love trends and I love your trend presentation. And you always have such a different outlook on it. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Of course. Now, you are going to ask me what my superpower is, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
I've been thinking about that since I was listening to your podcast.
That was my next question. What is your superpower?
Well, I've thought about it a lot. And I think it's what I think has made me successful and also attracted me personally to the ideas of trends that are included in trends, is that you're looking at something in a different way every day, that you wake up and you really have an expectation for something new, something different, something wonderful on the horizon. Sort of having an artistic personality myself, you're hampered by the fact, at least I am, that I want to redo everything that I've ever done before. I'd like to make it different. I'd like to make it better. I'd like to make it prettier, or I'd like to make it more relevant to what's going on. So I thought about that, you know, professionally, how that sort of drives me forward, always wanting to do, you know, that my best project's still out there. A lot of people have, well, this is my big, you know, this is what I did that I'm the most proud of. And I just haven't done that yet, you know? And I'm still waiting for it to come along, and maybe it'll slap me on the face one day, maybe it won't. But professionally doing that, and also personally doing that, there's so much to be said about how we can cultivate our relationships with the people we're working with. And I have always made it a practice, more than just professing to it. But I wake up in a new world every morning. They say geese wake up in a new world every morning, and they're referring to how stupid they are. But I try to wake up in a new world every morning thinking maybe the day's situation before wasn't perfect, but it might clear up today. And it goes with personal relationships that, you know, if you're working with somebody you're not having a great time with, sleep on it. Maybe they'll be better in the morning. Maybe you will be too. So I think my super power is to be able to move forward. And isn't that what trends are about?
It truly is. And I would add to your superpower from an outsider's opinion, your ability to see things just a little differently. Usually, it's hilariously, you always make me laugh at your keen observations, but I think because you can see it a little differently, you lead us in that direction.
And I changed the prescription to my eyeglasses as well, so everything's coming a little bit more clear these days.
And that was with that late birthday.
Yeah, exactly. Woo! The cataracts have yet to cloud my vision. How about that?
They will.
Oh, I was warned of that recently at the optometrist.
You mentioned my son, Drew, earlier. When I asked him for his superpower, he said it was his energy. And I said, well, be really careful, because I've always said that my superpower was my energy. It does start to go away. Enjoy it.
This has been fun.
You are a delight. As always, thank you so much. And again, in the transcript and in the blog, we'll have links so people can follow your advice, and we will connect them with you. Smithers Oasis North America, Talmadge, and I want to thank you for joining us today. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. And be sure to hit subscribe. You don't want to miss the inspired solutions our upcoming guest will share with you for your personal growth or business growth. If you have topics or a guest you'd like to hear, please message me. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, I'm Sharon McGookin, reminding you that like the unfurling petals of a flower, we grow by changing form, soaking inspiration in like raindrops, absorbing energy from others like warmth from the sun. This growth opens us up to new ideas, and that's how we bloom.